to the committee. My name is Bill Walker. I'm the city attorney for...
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill Walker. I'm the city attorney for Valdez. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. Graduated from high school in Valdez. I first would like to thank you very sincerely for coming to Valdez. The reason that this means so much to us is that this is the third or fourth or fifth time that we have fought this fight, and this is the first time that we've had anybody come to Valdez to talk to us about it. Historically, we've heard about it by word of mouth, by rumor, occasionally a direct call, and each time we gather together as many as possible to go to Juneau to address the powers that be that we need to enlighten, and each time have been successful. It's a expensive, time-consuming a battle that the city has been in historically in doing this, and it's so refreshing that a committee has come to Valdez to listen to the residents of Valdez testify on this issue, and I thank you very much for that. At the original organizational meeting in Anchorage, we spoke briefly of the scope of your review. You were kind enough to allow us to discuss other issues regarding limitations on oil and gas property and not limiting us to the two or three statutory interpretations that the state assessor has taken exception to, and I thank you for that. The reason for that is that there are many limitations on oil and gas communities, and I would like to touch briefly on those this evening. Earlier today, Mr. Gilson, our treasurer, went through the complicated formula that you saw. In that, an important factor is population. It's based upon population, not necessarily based upon needs or services or anything else. Population is critical. If the interpretation is being suggested by the assessor, state assessor, was adopted, the Valdez would have absolutely no incentive to move forward with additional oil and gas development. Now, Valdez has been aware of this for a number of years, that there's this potential, the challenge, and each time we win. But in spite of that, they've gone out and negotiated with Alaska Pacific Refining Company on a refinery here. They're working aggressively in supporting the gas line to Valdez. And yet that's additional oil and gas property that'll go into this formula. And as we've learned, oil and gas property is not necessarily labor intensive. There's a lot of technology. So a large dollar project does not necessarily mean there'll be thousands of jobs to go with it. So you may have the burden of the services, but you may not have the population to fit into this equation to be able to receive more taxes. So that is a real concern to Valdez as it looks into its future of additional oil and gas development. The scenario we heard this afternoon, the North Slope Borough, I personally found very sad that a borough who has a school burned down cannot go to the bond market because of the questions, the cloud over its taxing formula. This could have happened so easily to the city of Valdez, and the number of times the city has been to the bond market. Bonding for capital improvement projects takes time, it's expensive, and on the eve of going to the market, something like this could be disastrous. Another limitation. The TAPS settlement agreement was probably one of the single most detrimental lawsuits settled in the state of Alaska to the city of Valdez. The TAPS settlement consisted of a negotiated settlement of setting the rate of the common carrier, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. As part and parcel of that negotiated settlement was the depreciation schedule of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Now, bear in mind, we don't know how important that was in the negotiations, but that's what was kind of the fallout of that settlement, was a new depreciation schedule, a rapidly accelerated depreciation schedule. As you heard today from Mayor Devins, from Mr. Gilson, and many others, Valdez had set its bonded indebtedness on the original depreciation schedule. So along comes a revised one. We went to the bond market immediately to salvage as much as possible. As Mr. Gilson mentioned, out of that negotiated settlement, the state received $140 million. That legislative session, the city of Valdez received a little over $1 million on a one-time offset to the major loss. You saw the handout that Mr. Gilson gave. It showed over $40 million, approximately $40 million in lost revenues to the city. One problem we have with the appraisal methodology, and as you well know, it affects 94% of our tax base, is that first it was done as a negotiated settlement as part and parcel of a very large lawsuit. A lawsuit in which the state had a lot to gain in the settlement of that. They're the owner of the royalty oil, they have a severance tax that's based upon depreciation. They were wearing a lot of hats in that negotiation. And as we well know, the outcome of that case to the city of Valdez was not, as far as we know, it was not foremost in their minds, or perhaps not even in their minds at all. They set a rate base for the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. As part of that was a depreciation schedule. That is the same as to say, if Alascom is to set their rate schedule, they will include their plant cost. Their plant cost includes buildings. They have an office building in Anchorage. I assume that's part of their plant cost. And they have a depreciation schedule for that, for their rate base. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the municipality of Anchorage is going to accept that depreciated rate schedule and their rate base as the fair market value of the building. It's apples and oranges. And I think the state of Alaska made a major error when they settled that case and dealt with the value of the pipeline in that method, with that methodology. You've heard the numerous attempts to get into the meetings and to be a part of that. We just have not been successful. The alternative is to challenge it and to spend close to $1 million on an appraisal to challenge that. That's a lot of risk. Assuming you're going to be successful in your attempt, that's a heavy burden for a community to take on in these times. We heard earlier from the Department of Revenue that we had a handout that showed that the mill rates of the cities were increasing and the dollars that the state was taking in property taxes was decreasing. Of course, that's what the depreciation schedule is all about in the TAMP settlement. We realized that in 1985 and reacted. If the value of what you're taxing is going down, your millage rate's going to go up. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. I don't think that the city of Valdez or any municipality along the pipeline should have to pay for the state's mistakes. And that's really what it boils down to in the TAMP settlement. That's my third limitation that Valdez suffers with. The fourth, of course, is the limitation that we've been struggling with as far as the formula and back and forth, the number of times that's been challenged. That's very clearly a limitation. Another limitation comes in the form of service areas. There's an Alaska statute that says municipalities can create service areas. There's a section of the Alaska Constitution that says municipalities can create service areas. We created a service area. The service area consisted solely of oil and gas property. That was in 1986, and that was challenged. And I'd like to read a couple of quotes from those briefs. I apologize for reading it, but I think it's important that you understand how that limitation, and it clearly is a limitation, has affected Valdez. In the opening brief, which was filed on September 3rd of 1987, it sets out the purpose of Service Area 3. And I quote, Service Area 3 was created for the protection of the Valdez environment. In recent years, Valdez has consistently been in the headlines due to environmental violations by Alaska Pipeline Service Company. that pose grave risk to workers in the coastal and marine environment of Valdez. The reported problems and violations range from handling of sludge to the oil spill in the Gulf of Alaska of nearly a million gallons from a veteran tanker of the Panama Valdez Run. With these environmental problems constantly in the foreground, an alarming concern developed among the citizenry leadership of the city of Valdez with regard to the safety of the waters of Valdez Arm and Prince William Sound, and the potential impact of a catastrophic tanker oil spill or other environmental damage from Alyeska's oil activities. As this opening brief was being written, it was in the final days of the spill in Cook Inlet. And I quote from the Anchorage Daily News, which is in the brief. As this is being written, oil spill cleanup crews are laboring in Cook Inlet with the aftermath of a 125,000-gallon spill that occurred on July 2nd, resulting from a leak in the Glacier Bay tanker as it delivered Alaskan crude to the refinery in Nikiski. Cleanup efforts have been handicapped by lack of manpower and equipment. So the city of Valdez has not turned a blind eye to what has happened in the world in the way of oil spills. We've been in contact with Port Angeles in 1986 as far as their devastation of 1985 of an oil spill of 289,000 gallons. The Port Angeles Daily News quoted in 86, after years of relatively trouble-free operations in the harbor, the ARCO oil spill slugged like a sucker punch at the gut of one of the area's most prized resources. And the final quote in the opening brief is, in referring to the Glacier Bay spill, local headlines read, quote, spill catches state industry unprepared, and cites lack of manpower, supplies, equipment, and helicopter surveillance as factors hamstringing the cleanup of the Glacier Bay leak. With the high volume of oil tanker traffic in the Port of Valdez, and given the degenerative effect of the age of many of these tankers, the law of probability suggests that it is only a matter of time before a spill threatens to rampage the waters and shores of Port of Valdez. If and when that happens, the city of Valdez wants to have its nuts and bolts in place and be prepared to work as a partner with Alyeska in the prevention of such destruction. Service Area 3 affords those nuts and bolts. Through the services it has provided, even in its embryonic stage, Service Area 3 may already have thwarted a Port Angeles or a Cook Inlet type nightmare. And I want to emphasize that was in 87, that's not something we've come up with in the last 22 days. My final quote from the Service Area 3 briefs is in the reply brief dated November 9, 1987. I quote, the city of Valdez sits as a student in the Port Angeles and Cook Inlet classrooms. Valdez wants its homework completed and its research, study, training, and equipment in place. So when put to the test, it will excel. The stakes are high. They are worth the price. I'd be happy to give you a copy of this brief if that would be of any interest to you. I recognize that your role is not to deal with Service Area 3. But you have agreed to look at the limitations on municipalities affected by oil and gas. That alone is probably one of the largest limitations that you can ever put on a municipality, is to give them the industry and tie both hands behind their back to prevent their own ability to be prepared for such a disaster as we've experienced here. Unfortunately, rather than investing our money in oil spill booms, skimmers, cross-training our city employees and the community as we had proposed, the money has not been expended because we received a letter of major error and we have proceeded to the Supreme Court. A sad, sad commentary on a community trying to protect themselves from what they knew was a matter of when. Several times today we've heard mention of the unfairness of treating oil and gas property different than mining, fishing, and timber. And we certainly do not mean to in any way imply that we're picking on communities or regions of Alaska that have those natural resources in their area. However, I think that oil and gas is distinctively different. It's a non-renewable resource. The fish will continue to come. The trees continue to grow. Oil and gas will end. It's a non-renewable resource. When the oil in celebration took place in 1976, the City of Valdez began a course to assure its present and future generations that when the last drop of oil reached Valdez, it would not be a devastation and we would not be a total bust ghost town community. Valdez has set its course. Valdez is doing the best to remain on course given the events of the last 22 days. And it is beyond comprehension that at this juncture of our future, our tax base is once again being challenged. We've heard several times today, if there was a theme that you've heard today, I think it would be one of stability. I'd like to make some recommendations that we think would be helpful in accomplishing that. You have before you the handout which deals with the recommendations. I apologize to those in the audience, we do have handouts for these recommendations. They'd not be able to see this. The first thing we feel is important is that we feel it's unfair for there to be a limitation on property tax in an organized municipality. There has been and continues to be a strong emphasis from within the state to organize and be in control of yourself, to create boroughs. There's a mandatory borough act. We think it's unfair that those that do form the municipalities take on the responsibility of taxing are then limited because they have oil and gas property. Alternatively, it appears that there needs to be some either revision to the existing statutes that deal with oil and gas taxation or at least an administrative regulation. Valdez has been through this too many times. In order to assure any future development of the City of Valdez, it is mandatory. I think the situation of North Slope Borough with their bonded indebtedness of going to the bond market for another bond issue, I think if Valdez went, I don't think Valdez could go in the next until this is cemented in some sort of a regulation or a revision in the statutes. I think that we would be a story bond as well, and it wouldn't be a very optimistic story looking at the number of times that we've repeatedly have had to go through this exercise. Service Area 3. There is a statute, AS 4356-010B, which says that you will not tax oil and gas property higher than anyone else. That is the statute that was raised in opposition to the constitutional permission for a service area, the state statute for a service area, our own charter and code provision for service area. That you will not treat oil and gas property differently. The Alaska Association of Assessors looked at the issue and they said their response was surely that was not what the legislature intended to require municipalities to provide services to oil and gas taxpayers and not charge them for it. That surely was not what they intended. We didn't think that's what they intended either. We had Alyeska as the only taxpayer because they were the only taxpayer that brought in 800 tankers a year. Part of our argument, and I'm sorry to be going back to Service Area 3, but I think it's important. Part of our argument is that the tanker fleet was 10 years old. We were concerned. Things were happening. Rudders were falling off. They had cracks in their hulls, and approximately 3 months ago, that was major news in Alaska. And again, 2 years after we made the argument, it's discovering that the wear and tear on tankers and going across the Gulf is greater than in other areas. Bounties was preparing for an oil spill. We had no idea how it would happen. We anticipated there would be mechanical failure. We created an environmental service area that would allow a disabled tanker, or a thought to be disabled tanker, to have safe berthing while repairs would be made. And in addition to that, we had prepared ongoing year's budget with a long-range plan, which would certainly be in effect today, that would have involved the additional services, including the booming and skimming and response teams. The last recommendation is that the TAPS valuation method should be reexamined. Now that's easy to say. Whether that can be or not is would be a legal question between the state and those who they entered into the agreement with. We were not a party to that agreement. We were merely a victim of the agreement. However, as I stated earlier, I do not think that the municipalities that have the oil and gas should be the victims of and punished because of the state's mistake. Some have asked, why are we so excited about this, especially in the wake of what we're dealing with locally? I think it's best put in a numeric equation. What has been challenged, the city of Valdez affects 94% of its tax base. The revenues received by the state from our oil and gas property within our city affects their budget by 0.0008, less than $2 million. This is the lifeblood of our community, it's the lifeblood of our future. And we thank you very much for your review of it, and we hope that you'll see our recommendations as valid. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone on the committee wish to ask a question?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. Rose.
I have two different lines I'd like to pursue. The one deals with the questions of impairment of contract. When the city issued debt in 1980 and 1983, your two large issues, $18 million and $55 million, you made representations with respect to the methodology of oil and gas tax collections, and issue bonds on reliance of that. And those bonds are indeed bought on that reliance. As an instrumentality of the state, does the state have an ability legally to force an impairment of contract by a change in that methodology, or because it's a sovereign, can it do anything it wants?
No, it cannot. It cannot change the original. On the original bonds, the bondholders, the bond buyers relied upon that. Valdez relied upon that. There's ample case law in Alaska that an administrative decision made and a community relies upon it. They cannot then go back, and even if they clearly made an error, they cannot go back if the community detrimentally relied upon that. Most of the case law in that area deals with the commercial fishing permits. However, it's clear case law that they cannot go back and do that.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Would it be your position then that even if the methodology were changed, that at least with respect to existing debt sold on reliance of that methodology, that would have to be held harmless? You'd have to be held harmless in that regard?
That's correct. As far as for future bondings that we're talking about?
Well, I'm talking about the existing debt. In other words, if indeed the methodology was changed, could it be changed with respect to the debt that's outstanding?
No.
So you could not go back and impair that existing contract. So as a minimum, if there were a change, it could only be forward-looking, not past-looking.
That's correct. That's correct.
Okay. Madam Chair, one of the questions.
Yes.
Good. The second line I wanted to pursue is, when there is a dispute with respect to assessed valuation, the appraisal, with, I assume, it's the higher Department of Revenue. Am I correct that there is an appeal process, that if you don't like that evaluation, you can't appeal it?
That's correct. And we have a number of occasions.
Is that a difficult appeal?
Well, it's difficult because the burden is then on the city of Valdez to go forth and prove that Mr. Heyer is wrong. And that's a very expensive process that the city has not chosen to date to undertake that expense. It's a shake of the dice, because if you don't get the additional value, you are out that money.
If you want to appeal, though, you want to attack or question the facts and the figures and the methodology used in arriving at that evaluation. Is that material available to you in all respects?
As far as their methodology?
Yes.
Absolutely not. The reason for that is that they have repeatedly said that in reaching the value, they look and use the owner company's tax returns. And that is information that would not be available they would not be able to share with the city of Valdez. And so that has been the guise of continuing denying our access to even observe that process.
So that you may be in a position where you want to appeal their evaluation findings, yet you don't have access to their methodology.
Well, I guess I'm not sure what we'd get in that methodology, and let me explain that. We did have a meeting following one of the, either before or after one of the rate-setting years, and we met with Mr. Heyer, and we asked him the methodology he used. He said, well, he uses three different types of methodology. He said, okay, that we're aware of that. It's laid out in the statutes quite clear. We said, now, what weight do you give to each one? And that was not available. So if he can't give us the weight of each of the three methodologies that goes in the equation, I'm not sure what we'd even find if we were able to have access to records.
Okay. Madam Chair, just one comment. Do you have access to the components of each of those three different variables to know what components he's used in reaching conclusions in the three different valuation methods?
No. All we have is what's in the state statute of what he is required to do.
Well, Madam Chair, because I received Mr. Heyer's letter, but if I were trying to appeal something based on that generalization, I still wouldn't have any facts. There are no regulations promulgated that makes an affected municipality a party to discussions or
there's reference to that, and that has never been defined as far as what being a party to that is. As far as we certainly never been allowed into it, so we know that's not what it means. Does it mean meeting with him beforehand? Occasionally that's been successful. Occasionally meet with him afterwards. But that still doesn't help us in being a true party, a participant to this assessment process.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Does anyone else have a question? Mr. Weissman.
Madam Chairman, as a follow-up to Dale's question and as a statement made earlier, with reference to legal actions that the city of Valdez may have against the state, against the oil companies, I think you've indicated at least one where now this is in process in the Supreme Court.
That's correct.
And I'm wondering if there are any details available that you can make to us that's not confidential because of the future court actions to further explain what is going on there.
Well, what it boils down to is that there is a conflict as far as which prevails, the oil and gas statute or the statute that allows for service areas in municipalities and the sections of our charter, our code, and the Constitution that deals with the same issue. So it's a statutory interpretation argument is what it amounts to.
Okay. Madam Chairman.
Yes.
What is the status of the proceedings as far as going ahead? Is this active at the
present? It certainly is. We've appealed it to the Alaska Supreme Court, and we're presently waiting for a briefing schedule. We would expect that approximately 9 months after receiving the briefing schedule, which we hope to get in the next 30 days, we should have gotten it a month ago, that there will be some sort of a resolution of it.
Okay. And Madam Chairman, Well, are there any other legal actions underway as far as Valdez goes on this subject?
I really couldn't speak to that.
As far as you know?
As far as the service area, the three?
No.
The taxation?
That is included, but any other points involving taxation that's underway now?
Not that I'm aware of.
Fine. Thank you.
Does anyone else on the committee wish to ask any questions? No? Thank you. Well, that concludes our agenda, but we are a bit early, and we could get back to the discussion of the mayor and Amawa's letter.
Madam Chair, also, if you'd like, we can provide the Valdez brief, the state briefs, and the Superior Court findings on the Service Area 3 case. Would you like that?
Yes.
Recommendations in the letter from Mayor Amawa. Are you satisfied with the brief discussion we did this afternoon? I'm ready to get some nitty gritty on it. Dr. Williams? Everybody's remaining silent. No discussion?
Well, Madam Chair.
Yes.
The request was for an early handling of this matter, at least even on an interim basis. And I guess the biggest question is, how do we do that without short-circuiting the full discussion, debate, and logical climax to all of this testimony through the furnishing of a final deliberation? And it would seem that what we would have to do is draw conclusions earlier than we would be ordinarily prepared to do it. And that's very awkward, because what it sort of does is short circuit the process that we're trying to go through. I'm just not sure how you can get there from here. This is a Senate Select Committee charged with responsibility to replying to the Senate committee. And frankly, I don't see anything short of the fulfillment of that procedure. Now, if the chairman of that Senate committee were to inquire as to what progress we had made and what views we might have, either collectively or as a group, I guess we could respond to him on an interim basis. But I think that would be up to that chairman to ask for that kind of a report or what have you. Short of that, I think we just continue our process as fast as we can.
I will be speaking to the chairman and perhaps the entire committee next week on several issues, including this. I just wondered if you wanted to have any additional discussion in public on the issue, or if we should leave it as an agenda item for the next meeting. An answer to the letter should occur in some way. Marty, did you have something you wish to say?
No, Madam Chair, but if you wait till the next meeting to provide any indication of how you want to respond, it will have missed their deadline for requests. So I do need some sort of direction, I believe, prior to that.
I'd like the committee to give some direction. Or shall we take a break and you go out and freshen?
Madam Chair, I have real problems trying to come up with a recommendation, to say nothing of a regulation at this point. I think it's...
Do you think we could say anything about a regulation? That isn't our charge.
No, but I mean, I can't see that at this point. We haven't even conducted our last hearing. So I guess I have a real problem with that. I have a lot of sympathy for the position in which that borough has been placed, and Valdez also. But I just... think it's an issue that I don't feel comfortable addressing. Yeah.
Dr. Williams?
Well, I think the one disadvantage to making a recommendation would be that it might precipitate a resolution that no one would be happy with, and let alone fulfill the mandate for the committee.
Did you have anything you wanted to say, Ron?
Well, I certainly agree with what has been said here as far as an overall recommendation coming from the committee. It could well be that maybe there is an approach that the North Slope Borough could use by going to the state administration and seeing if any results would be forthcoming there. And then without our entering it until we're ready to do it, there are at least two more hearings to be held, and then further discussions before we can come out. And I think anything that we would take at this time would have or could have a bearing on the integrity of what we would come forth with later.
Is there further discussion or anything else further? Does anyone want to put it to a motion that we do say what Earl has suggested, or shall we just let me draft a letter and as soon as possible in answer to the North Slope Borough's letter and send it to the committee for correction and we'll get it out? Or do I have a motion?
Madam Chairman, I believe the letter has to be answered one way or the other, and accordingly I would make a motion to that effect to follow through on your suggestion.
Is there a second to the motion?
A second.
It's being moved and seconded. Is there further discussion?
I'm confused about what the letter's supposed to say. Sorry, but...
All right. That's further discussion. So I wanted to get out.
Madam Chairman, I, as you outlined before, I think that's about what the letter should say. Maybe you ought to do it again.
What I would say was that they should go to the administration, that the committee doesn't feel that it's appropriate.
Okay.
That would be the nature of the motion. Is there further discussion? Is there anyone in the audience here who would like to add something to the discussion before we vote on the issue?
Madam Chair?
Jim? Did you want to speak? Before you speak, Jim, what, Marty, did you have
anything? Madam Chair, I just do want to make a statement that there is some potential, I believe, that the administration would be unwilling at this point in time to consider anything. I'm not positive this, but they might, because they are waiting for your recommendations to the Senate. They have made it very clear that they're interested in that. So I wanted it fully understood, though.
But the recommendations, they don't know what our recommendations would
That's
be.
That's true, but that they are pending, and I think they would be unwilling.
At the same time, this needs some type of answering. Yes,
So, Madam Chair, I'm Jim Sharp from the North Slope Borough. I don't think the intent was to try to put the problem squarely in your lap, but to get some advice on how to handle it because of the conditions we must operate under, which is to try to replace a property that was lost by fire within a reasonable time. I think it might be important, if it's possible, to receive some indication from the state through whatever channels that in, I suppose, DCNRA, that they will not issue a letter of major errors until this committee has made its recommendations on this matter. If I could just capsule the problem for us, I think that's it. And that's the kind of assurance that we need.
I think that's been verbally stated, and it's on tape in that interview with Commissioner Hoffman and Barrow.
But, Madam Chair, I'm sure you understand that the state assessor, by law, can issue a letter of major errors irrespective of the department policy. At least that's our interpretation.
I understand that, and the committee understands that. Is there any, Marty?
Just to respond, I believe that the state assessor himself is willing to wait, and there is certainly some chance that he's willing to document that until the committee has made recommendations to the Senate. But there is the potential that even that would not come through. I just wanted people to know that on the record. It's probably a 50-50 chance.
Yeah. Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would definitely support the committee requesting that action such as that to the assessor or to Commissioner Hoffman, to the effect that we would strongly urge that some kind of statement, written statement. Now, I have no idea whether it would help your situation or not. That seems to be debatable. But to me, that makes more sense, Madam Chair, than just asking, throwing it to the administration, because we're just playing games. I mean, they're going to throw it back. And that makes me feel uncomfortable to do that, because I don't think asking the administration to do something that we've been charged to kind of do is going to make much sense.
So we haven't been charged to do interim regulation?
No. But you understand what I'm trying to say. I feel uncomfortable. I feel like we're just playing games by doing the other.
Did you have anything you wanted?
No,
sir.
Recommendation or your request, I think, is very reasonable in the sense that I feel uncomfortable in this situation of being a member of this committee, where I feel that that the state assessor at any time could issue a letter of major error, and while we're in process of trying to make some recommendations or investigate this whole issue, it would be perhaps reassuring to the committee as well that, you know, that we had that assurance.
Well, I've talked with the state assessor several times in great depth, and my impression of the way he feels about it, he doesn't want to do anything until the committee comes up with a recommendation to the legislature. Now, that could have changed since I last talked to him because of some circumstance, I don't know. But I probably will be talking with him next week when I'm in Juneau. But that is what he's indicated to me, definitely.
I think it would be of considerable more confidence to us if we could have that in writing because of the history
yes.
of the problem.
Thank you. Did you want to speak?
Yeah, I don't want to beat this issue to death here, but let me just one more small statement about this. In terms of the committee's role and making recommendations before you really feel ready and so on, you're making recommendations to the legislature as to whether there should be legislative change in some manner about this. I think that the issue of the regulations relates really to the question of stability. And that doesn't have that much to do with the substance of what should happen in the future with regard to municipal taxation of oil and gas property. I see them as very discrete issues. One is sort of pinning down the status quo so that, you know, there are statutes on the books and interpretations that have been in existence for 11 years. And the problems that you've been hearing, I assumed you heard them in Barrow, and I heard them loud and clear here, is the uncertainty because of varying interpretations. I mean, one lawyer says, I think it means this, and another lawyer or assessor says, no, I think it means that. And these are the kinds of things that have been going back and forth. Who knows what the legislature really thought back in 1973. But to the extent that could be pinned down, pending substantive recommendations from this committee. In a sense, I guess we're asking not so much for a substantive recommendation on what the law should ultimately be, but simply a statement from the committee, if and when you are prepared and feel comfortable to make it, that some sort of interim stability would be very helpful to the communities that are affected. I don't know if that makes any sense or if that puts it in what I think is a more accurate perspective, and not asking the committee to make premature recommendations on the underlying policy or the substance of the issue. I don't know if that helped.
Thank you. Bill, did you want to see?
Chair Bill Walker. Not trying to get involved in what the North Slope situation is, since they are going to the bond market, we are not. However, if a request is going to be made to the state assessor to issue some sort of assertion or moratorium during this review period, we'd certainly like the city of Alvey to be included as far as to receive some of the same assurance.
We would concur.
Great. Thank you.
The motion is being made and seconded. Is the committee ready to vote? Or is there more discussion in the committee on the type of letter to reply?
Madam Chairman,
yes.
It seems to me that the discussion here would be further direction in the letter to go along from what you've heard and so forth.
Marty?
I think it's fairly fair that Deborah Vogt is here with the Department of Revenue. I'm here with the Department of Community and Regional Affairs. I think it's fairly safe to say that if the recommendation of the committee was made to the executive branch asking the state assessor to make a statement that he would not take any major errors action pending your recommendations, that would probably be accepted.
Could I ask you, Deborah, with respect to this, to answer and come to the podium, please?
I don't have any really direct line to speculate on this issue any more than Marty does as far as what the state assessor might or might not do, but certainly what Marty has said seems consistent with my view of things, that the administration is looking to this committee to make some recommendations.